Okay, one of the things I've noticed in the last 15 years of teaching in yeshiva and the last 14 years of being a parent is that when a teacher or a parent, particularly, I guess you notice it more with teachers, that it happens more frequently, but when a teacher or a parent shows favoritism toward one child over another, the people who suffer most are not the ones who are being ignored or not favored or ridiculed or whatever. The people who suffer the most are the child who is being favored. The reason he suffers the most from it is that all of his friends realize that he's being favored. And while one likes to have their teacher's approval and their teacher's affection, one needs the approval and the affection of their peers. And it means a lot more to them. And nobody wants to be called the teacher's pet, the one who's who could do no wrong. No one wants to be singled out in that way. Yaakov Avinu favored one wife over another, favored the younger wife over another. He then favored one child over another, each time with disastrous consequences. And now it comes time to bless Ephraim and Menashe, Menashe and Ephraim. And once again we find that Yaakov favors the younger one over the older one. Who's the one to correct him? To say, no, enough, Dad. You can't do this again. Yosef. Why? Yosef was the beneficiary. It was awesome last time. I got a nice coat. I got to learn with you. Because who suffered the most from it? Yosef. It wasn't everybody else that suffered the most. It was Yosef that suffered the most from it. So Yosef corrects him. Yosef tries to fix it. Yosef tries to stop him. But Yaakov insists. How can he keep making the same mistake over and over again? Did he not learn from his past experiences? What was it about the Menashe-Ephraim dynamic that made him want to favor the younger one over the older one? Last year in my shir, every year, pretty much, my cousin Rav Natana Leibowitz from Yeshivas Lev HaTorah in Israel, and NCSY Kollel, some of you may know him, comes to visit. And whenever he comes to visit, I say, okay, Natana, you got to speak to my shir. Because invariably, at the end of the year, when I ask my shir, my high school shir, what was the most memorable, inspiring moment you've had the whole year, it's when Rav Natana Leibowitz came to speak to them. Like, thanks a lot, guys. But they're right. Last year when he came, he quoted a Talmud Yerushalmi. Talmud Yerushalmi says, Gadol Kiddush Hashem Mechilul Hashem. You ever hear such a profound insight? Gadol Kiddush Hashem Mechilul Hashem. You know what's better than Chilul Hashem? Kiddush Hashem. You know what else is better than Chilul Hashem? Everything else on earth. You know what else is worse than Kiddush Hashem? Everything else on earth. What is the kunst? What is the chiddush? That gadol Kiddush Hashem mechilul Hashem. That Kiddush Hashem is better than chilul Hashem. Of course it's better than chilul Hashem. Chilul Hashem is the worst thing on earth. Kiddush Hashem is the greatest thing on earth. What is Yerushalmi trying to tell us? So my cousin suggested that we tend to fixate on chilul Hashem. When there's a chilul Hashem, when something goes wrong, when somebody is doing something or isn't doing what they're supposed to be doing, we focus on it, we complain loudly about it, we tweet about it, we read articles about it in the newspapers and the blogs. Kiddush Hashem, on the other hand, doesn't quite grab our attention just as much. When somebody does do something right, we tend to overlook it, we tend to take it for granted. It's there. He did it. Okay, that's what I expect. Oh, he did a nice deed. Congratulations. Pat on the back. But Chilul Hashem gets us all riled up. It's Shabbos table conversation. Such a Chilul Hashem. It grabs our attention. People in general have a tendency to complain when something doesn't go their way. But people in general have a tendency not to acknowledge when something good happens. We act this way in our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we act this way in our relationship with each other. Think back to the three or four or five most powerful tefillos you ever offered to the Ribbono Shel Olam. To a davening that had particularly intense kavana. where you really, really felt that you were connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you've had the zuchus of such an experience, how many of those tefillos were in response to illness, war, unemployment, other sorrows to face ourselves personally, our families, or Klal Yisrael? And how many of them were about the birth of a baby in the family, someone getting married, a simcha, a promotion, a raise, getting into a school you wanted to get, something? My bet is that for most of us, we emphasize the negative a little more than the positive. We're bothered by the negative more than we are encouraged by the positive. We fixate on the negative more than we fixate on the positive. I once had a conversation with a Rebbe in a yeshiva. He was a first-year Rebbe. So he was a little nervous about it, not this yeshiva, but he was a little nervous about how he was doing. I helped him get his job, he was teaching in the yeshiva, whatever, I put in a good word for him. And then with his own talents and charisma and brilliance and everything else, he got the job. And he called me up and he said, you know, can you find out if they think I'm doing a good job or not? I said, what do you mean, find out? He said, well, no one tells me anything. I've been here for months. No one tells me if I'm doing anything good or if I'm doing anything bad, if they want me to correct something, if they want me to... I have no idea if they like the job that I'm doing. So I told him, you have nothing to worry about. If something was wrong, you would have heard about it. When something is right, you don't necessarily hear about it. It's human nature. Something goes off, we complain. Something's done right, we don't... Rabbi Kamenetsky, to his unending credit, is very good about making sure to reinforce the positive and to let people know that they're appreciated and that they're loved and that they're, even when people don't want to know, they're like Rabbi Klapa, the last thing he wants is to be honored. But he's being honored this much because Rabbi Kamenetsky wants to let somebody know when they're appreciated, when they're loved. And that's a phenomenally positive and extraordinarily rare thing. One of my children once told me that he got a positive behavior card in yeshiva that day. So I was so excited. Positive. He got a positive card. So I went home to read the note. And what did he do? The card read, he didn't run or scream in the hallways, and he wasn't being mean to others. That was the positive card. The positive card was that he wasn't negative. Last night, parent-teacher conferences I had for my kids. I can't make this up. One of the Rebbeim said, well, he doesn't hurt anybody. Great. We have such nachas. Doesn't hurt anybody. My wife remarked that there's a difference between not behaving in a negative way and behaving in a positive way. You know, we'd like to see positive, but sometimes we fixate on the negative. And even when we try to focus on the positive, what we end up, we don't even know how to define it anymore. What we end up focusing on is what's not negative. What was the best thing that happened to you this week? Well, I didn't have a test. We end up focusing on what didn't happen. Perhaps Yaakov is favoring Yosef, and then Ephraim has nothing to do with their age. It's not that he feels bad for the cute little kid. By the time Yaakov was favoring Ephraim, he was probably no longer cute. He's an adult already. It has to do with their attitude. In Yaakov's assessment, surviving the vicissitudes of life, and particularly life in Galus, demands a focus on the positive. We have enough negativity that surrounds us. We need to bring positive to be encouraged, to bring positivity into our lives in order to continue to serve Hashem properly. Reuven is given his name because Reu ma bein bini u ben chami. What does that mean? Reuven is defined by what he is not. He's not Esav. That's the greatness of Reuven. Yosef is given his name. Yosef Hashem li ben acher. He's a hosafa, an addition, something new. Something to look forward to about the future, about building, about what comes next. Reuven's defining moment in life. isn't saving Yosef, except he didn't really save Yosef. He just didn't kill him. He didn't allow the negative to occur. Had Reuven actually saved Yosef, put him on his shoulders, brought him back to Yaakov, that would have been a positive action. Yosef is defined by his dreams, appropriate or not, but dreams of grandeur, of majesty, of a future, of something great. Even when faced with the brothers who made his life miserable and almost killed him, Yosef tells them, Hashem chashavani letova. When he talks about the most miserable time in his life that led him into an Egyptian jail, that led him on a caravan of Yishmaelim or Midianim or whoever it was, when he talks about the most miserable times in his life, Hashem chashavani letova, don't worry, it's all good, it's all for the positive, everything's good. That's Yosef. Extremely gracious, chooses to look at all the good that resulted from his forced trek to Mitzrayim. And when faced with the problem of 7 years of famine, he doesn't try to fix the famine per se. He tries to save the world by using the great years of blessing to save the world. It's not about fixing the negative. The negative may be there, but it's about taking the positive and allowing that to be mashpia on the negative. And that's what Yosef is all about. Yaakov chose Rachel over Leah because Leah's greatness was in her desire to Eine Leah Rakos. Why were her eyes soft? Because she would cry. What would she cry about? Not, I want to marry Yaakov, but, oh God, I don't want to marry Esav. Her defining tefillah was a tefillah of what not to have. Rachel's greatness is in what she does in a positive way, going out of her way to help her sister out. So when faced with two grandchildren, one of whom is named because he represents how Yosef was able to forget, Eskol Amali, and the, right, Menashe, Nashani Elukim, Eskol Amali, Hashem allowed me to forget, Kol Amali, Kol Beis Avi, all the trials and tribulations and bad times, I was able to forget, so that's why I named Menashe. And the other, who's named because Yosef is able to be successful and build an empire, Hifrani Elokim, I've been successful in this place. Yaakov favors the positive force rather than the neutralization of the negative force. And Yaakov gives the bracha to Ephraim, the stronger bracha to Ephraim over Menashe. The idea of having a positive attitude toward life, of walking around with a smile on your face, is something that can affect your every interaction. It can affect the kind of day that you have and that the people around you have. Professor Kahaneman from Princeton, not to be confused with his cousin Rav Kahaneman from Panovich, writes in his book, I didn't think you'd confuse them, but I like saying that. He writes in his book of a study that was done, I believe at the University of Michigan, I'm not sure, where they had different people watch a comedy movie. Some people had to take a pencil and hold it in their mouths between their teeth like this. Others had to take the same pencil, or a different pencil, it could be Jeremy's, had to take a pencil and hold it in their mouths with the long part sticking out like this, with their lips pursed like that as they were watching the movie. What they found is the people who were holding the pencil in their mouth like this, in clenched between their teeth, notice what that does? It's a smile, right? It's a forced smile. They found the movie much funnier than the people who were pursing their lips in a forced frown. They had no idea, they weren't told to smile or to frown, just to hold the pencil in that way. And they found it much funnier. Was it funnier? It was the same movie. And when they showed him a sad movie, the people with the pencil pursed in their lips were crying their eyes out. And the other guys were like, okay, whatever, it's a movie. Unbelievable. Just the way a person approaches, how he projects himself to the outside world. Am I a positive person or am I a negative person? Am I a person whose default position is to smile or am I a person whose default is to be sad until you give me a reason to be happy? And it affects everything you see. It affects your every interaction. It affects how you view everything. You hear people talk around a Shabbos table about schools. I live in a young community where everyone's either deciding on schools for their children or assessing their kids' schools. And you just hear so much negativity. And you think, like, how many times in Jewish history did we have our choice of yeshivas that actually break up the kids based on age and level and give personal attention? And it used to be there was a cheder that had every kid from the age of 6 to the age of 14 when you go out to work, and they were all in the same room learning. You think that was better educationally? But we complain what the school's not doing about this and not doing about that. And how much it costs, because we have so much less money now than our grandparents had and great-grandparents had in Europe or the first generation in America. Are you kidding? They had nothing. But we complain. We have to focus on what we do have, what's so positive, what we're being given, the opportunities we're being given. We're so lucky each and every day. I always tell my Talmidim, if I see a kid that's not smiling, what could you possibly be upset about? You're in the greatest boys' yeshiva high school in the world, and that always makes them smile. Or laugh. But either way, it's a smile. It's something positive. It helps a great deal in navigating difficult times when a person's able to keep a positive attitude. Many of you are at an age where you're going to be in the shidduch world soon. Don't underestimate the ability of a person to smile, to laugh, to take things in stride, to not get stressed out in difficult situations. Of all of the different factors, and there's so many different factors that have to be taken into account when choosing who you're going to marry, who you're going to spend the rest of your life with. But so many times, you know, people do think about it. They think about what's important, what's not important, and they have lists of the qualities that they're looking for. But so many times, you can take that list and just, even if everything is on the list below, just turn it upside down and say, now it's in the right order. And a lot of times, this doesn't even make the list. Shkafa, we're okay. She's beautiful, she's thin. Okay, we're good about that. She's comes from a great family. This is often the order I hear things. And it doesn't even make the list. Is she a positive person? Is she a happy person? Is she a well-adjusted person? Is she someone that's not going to stress and bring stress into the house whenever anything goes wrong? Critical. But if you want to be able to marry such a person, you have to be such a person. We have to be positive people. Yaakov tells us, survival in Gullus isn't easy. And we need the Yosefs of this world. We need the Ephraims of this world to get us through. Ephraim Elokim, Hashem has given me such success in Gullus. Enjoy that success. Use that success as a positive. Build off of that success. Gadol Kiddush Hashem, Mechilul Hashem.